PC Podcast here at AcmePackingCompany.com. Part of SB Nation, Packers Talk, for fans, by fans. The Packers come from behind to beat the Bengals in overtime. 27-24 was the final score in Lambeau. There's a lot to get to coming out of that game. And, of course, before the games on Sunday, there was the widespread kneeling, arm linking, etc., in reaction to Donald Trump's blathering. I think that's the succinct word for it. How can we not talk about that? So lots ahead on the show. We'll also update you guys on the APC podcast, Listener Pick'em League. Breaking news, I am still not good at picking games. Follow the show at the APC Pod on Twitter. For the latest nonsense from us here at Alex Patakis, at Ben Foldy, at Zach Rapport, you know the drill. You may also know that I am not Alex Patakis. New homeowner Ben Foldy is doing the housing shuffle, so the pod operation has gone modular. I am Zach Rapport, sitting in my bedroom in Queens, and happy to be joined via Skype. You can hear the crackling in the background. Sorry about that, guys. Is our usual host, Alex Patakis. What's up, man?
What's going on, Zach?
Oh, not much. Just holding it down in Queens and pinch hitting for Ben Foldy, who's not here, as I mentioned. This week is Nick Bornheimer, fellow recovering ESPN employee with Alex Patakis back there at their ESPN Milwaukee days. Nick, thanks for answering the bell on short notice, man.
Yeah, of course. I'm also in my bedroom in a different borough. I am in Brooklyn, so we
and,
Alex,
you're in Manhattan
that.
Right now, right?
I am. We're all in different boroughs. By the way, RIP Chinatown Kitchen. Just a shout out to the kitchen that was the home for this podcast for a while that is no longer.
Yeah, where is Ben's new apartment?
I believe it's in Flatbush, I think. I don't want to give too much information in case anyone wants to hunt him down for his takes. But it's in Brooklyn. More convenient for me, maybe.
Way less
Very inconvenient for you.
But speaking of convenience, I did kind of want to give one shout out before we get into things. To you, Alex, and also to Ben, the listeners, I don't know how much they know about the rigmarole that we all go through to like make sure that this show happens every week. And you guys have put in a lot of work schlepping equipment and making yourselves available when it may not be the most convenient the last few weeks to make sure that our listeners get a weekly show. And I wanted to thank you guys for that. Yeah, thanks.
Wow. The show's so much nicer when you drive it. I kind of like that. No, yeah, man. I mean, people need their takes, right? Take monsters got to eat, so we got to deliver.
Well, speaking of takes, why don't we get right into it? I touched on it at the top, but we'd be remiss if we did not start this week's show talking a bit about the widespread reaction across the NFL to Donald Trump's remarks. The president, during a non sequitur filled rant at a rally in Alabama, I think, reignited the Colin Kaepernick protest issue, thumping his chest about respecting the flag and heritage, blah blah blah, saying if players kneeled during the anthem that owners should, quote, get that son of a bitch off the field, end quote. And then just for some added seasoning, he sprinkled in some casual remarks about how the game has gotten too soft. So I'm clearly tipping my hand here about how I feel about this for you guys here. But Alex, I'll start with you. When you heard these remarks from the president, what did you think the reaction would be across the NFL? And did it play out like you thought it would on Sunday?
I mean, I thought there was going to be widespread kneeling, like you referred to earlier. And I guess, like, to address the question as to whether or not it played out like I thought it would, I guess not really. Like, I mean, you know, this is one of the things that I feel like all three of us have clearly discussed, like, coming into the show. And I don't want to sound, like, too harsh and tell people, like, how they should, I guess, like, convey a message that they want to convey. But I mean, there was a lot of people kneeling, a lot more people than last season and then even in the previous weeks. But I don't know. I want to know what, like, Nick and you, Zach, think about it, because I don't want to come off like sounding harsh when I say I feel like a lot of people in the NFL like just became like easy stance guy and took the opportunity to like respond to Donald Trump with a message that is basically just like a glorified, you know, press release or, you know, super generic store-bought, like, big box response that you would get from a coach in a press conference just on paper from an owner. Like, it kind of felt like the NFL was just like, oh, okay, Donald Trump is ripping our league, he's ripping our product, and he's calling our players sons of bitches for a protest that has nothing to do with patriotism. And in return, we're just going to be like, hey, you know what would be cool? If we all unite. Like, who's going to argue against that? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think anyone in the NFL truly took a controversial stance here, save for maybe like a couple players and a couple of teams. And I read something this morning that was say, like, I think it was a headline, and it was saying, like, the absent, you know, the one absent player, Colin Kaepernick, is the winner. Like, I don't see how he's a winner, because now the narrative is, like, gone so far from what I think his message was, which was simple. And it was that, hey, police kill a lot of black people and there's never a conviction. We should do something about that.
Right.
And now it's just turned into, if you kneel for the anthem, you're un-American, and, oh, by the way, you're offending troops. Like, that, the message is, like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't, Nick, what do you think? Like, I feel like this weekend almost, like, hurt Colin Kaepernick's message in a way rather than boosted it.
It just, it's gotten so, it's veered so far off the tracks and gotten away from what the original message was. And like you alluded to, it's not anti-American or anti-patriot, it's trying to start a conversation and using a particular platform to be able to do so, one that has tremendous reach, obviously, as the president can't keep the NFL out of his Twitter feed. But yeah, I mean, what I saw was a lot of reticence from the stances that people wanted to take. And I'm not really going to personally take a stand, because I understand it's a tough thing to navigate. I don't know if you guys saw the video on Twitter today of the quote unquote Packer fan burning all of his memorabilia in his trash can and saying F you to anybody who doesn't stand with the troops and stand with America. When you go out on a limb to unite like this, you're going to bring out all of the naysayers and the negative opinions and the ones, the racist ones, the ones that a lot of this Trump administration has emboldened. But at the same time, like, you want to be able to use your public figure and your transcendence to take a less reticent stand, a stand that, you know, can actually say something, as opposed to like Jerry Jones kneeling, like when I saw that on Twitter yesterday, Jerry Jones kneeling before the anthem. So it was kind of like, ha, I tricked you. Like, I didn't really do anything that was offensive, but I still showed that I was united with the team. But how united am I really? Because I still didn't take a real true stance. I don't know. It's a tough thing to navigate, but it didn't play out exactly the way that I thought it was going to after all the flamboyant comments from him, Trump, that is.
Yeah, I mean, I take your point, but I also want to, like, sort of double back to something that Alex said, and it's really, and kind of elaborate on it, and really, I just came away feeling like that in a way the message was hijacked, and so we, like, the displays that we saw weren't displays in solidarity against the common cause of being anti-police brutality against innocent people.
Right.
What we saw was Donald Trump said, fuck the NFL and fuck NFL players. And this was them saying, like, you know, we are united against you, Donald Trump. So to me, it didn't, I don't know. I the thing that I appreciate, like, there's players that sat down, that took a knee. I appreciated that. I appreciated the players that didn't come out at all. The linking arms thing is really the thing that kind of, it's a cop out, and it kind of, I don't know, it, I don't want to say it bothered me, but I just felt like it was just kind of, I don't know, Alex, I think you hit out on early in your point. It's just nice guy approach.
It just, I mean, Zach, it just seems like, how easy is it to sit here and, like, preach unity? Like, okay, so I'm looking at the quarterback, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm, like, ripping Aaron Rodgers, and I do want to give him a little bit of credit, because today, you know, as we tape this, he sat in front of his locker and spoke about, you know, wanting to get the fans engaged, and the one thing that I think he acknowledged that I want to give him credit for is this is not about patriotism. Like, this is not, or no, I think he said this is not about military. Our troops. Yeah, it's not about, like, first off, the NFL charges the military a ton of money for them to have, like, all these acknowledgments that they do in pregames and yada, 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 whatever. But that's besides the point. So, like, I'll give Rodgers credit in acknowledging that it's not about the military. But he's not going to elaborate on what it's actually about. And, like, I believe in my heart of hearts that he probably, and he said it in the Mina Kimes piece, like, knows that Colin Kaepernick probably should have a job. I would think that he probably stands for Kaepernick's cause. But he's still censoring himself. And the Instagram post, hashtag unity, hashtag brotherhood, hashtag family, hashtag love. Like, who in the world are you going to find to argue any of those things? Like, who's going to be anti-love, anti-brother? Like, that's not a controversial stance.
And for anyone who didn't see that Instagram post, it features Rodgers kneeling on the field at practice, I think, and with it a number of other players. Randall Cobb is among them.
Yeah, so I guess if you want to be like, and again, I don't know what it is about the NFL where people are so scared to take a stance, and it's why Colin Kaepernick is so brave. But, like, look at the way the NFL looks when in contrast to the NBA. I mean, Nick and I were talking about this earlier today, or even yesterday. LeBron James is the biggest athlete on the planet, probably, right? He spent a bulk of his press conference yesterday doubling down on calling the president of the United States a bum and just insulting him. And I think what John Wall said at Wizards Media Day was actually dead on. And he said, like, this is all well and good. He kind of like summed up our points. But until Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, like, really give this a voice, like, it's not really going to go anywhere. You're not going to see, like, the NFL become a progressive league. And both guys have taken, I think, the easy way out and discussed it from the standpoint of, like, well, we need to band together and not be divisive. So I don't know. It leaves me feeling like, okay, but what does that mean for police brutality and the people that Colin Kaepernick was standing up for to begin
right.
with?
Right. And the funny irony here is, I don't think this reverberates as much as it does if Colin Kaepernick has a job right now. And in this quote unquote blackballing, it's almost given more attention to the situation. Not almost, it has given more attention to the situation and made it more top of mind. And now you've got this incredibly divisive, incredibly childish fight going on with the White House. It's absolutely absurd.
Yeah, and it's crazy too because, I don't know what's gonna happen on Thursday night. Like, I guess they're just gonna link arms and stuff again, and I'm sure there'll be some kind of response to that. And I'm sure that, like, everyone's just gonna keep being like, "Well, unity and unity." Meanwhile, you have Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr. Like, they couldn't be more direct. Right, yeah. About like what they believe in.
They couldn't be more dope. These guys are awesome.
I know, right? It's crazy. And I just want to say, like, you know, I totally understand if you're, like, listening to this podcast, you're like, oh, I don't want to tune in for this. And if you're questioning your Packers fandom, like, because of this, because of this quote-unquote stance that they're taking, like, this probably isn't the podcast for you. Like, we are going to talk about football, but, like, I think, Zach, we all felt like, Nick, too, like, how could you ignore this? Like, the president brought it into our arena, and our quarterback is arguably the most vocal, even though he's not really saying anything.
It's that league.
And it starts with the owners too. Like, I mean, obviously the NBA is far more progressive. You have African American owners, you have players who can become owners. You know, with all these owners, like, first off, there's 7 owners who donated, we know, $1 million to Trump's campaign. Some of them were displaying unity, Shad Khan with the Jaguars in London, Jerry Jones last night, right? But the fact of the matter is, like, how much does that mean to you when you know for a fact that some of these owners are employing lesser quarterbacks than Kaepernick? And, like, actions speak louder than words, especially when they're just fluffy words to say, like, hey, let's all love each other. Like, these are all people who would not sign Colin Kaepernick and wanted to stay away from that. And are jumping at the opportunity to take a stance now that it's easy because the president made it about something that's almost impossible to argue with, that you shouldn't hate America, which no one was doing to begin with.
Yeah, actions speak louder than words, and money kind of in this league speaks louder than all of that. And I mean, just to kind of put a put a bow on it from the money perspective, and you touched on this a little bit, Alex. This is something that I've been harping on for many years, is I think that it's playing the anthem before sporting events is weird to me, and flag worship is weird to me when you really tried to put it into context of world history. And it wasn't until 2009 that the NFL really required players to come out and stand for the anthem, and that lines up with the start of a marketing partnership between the NFL and some branch of the armed forces. And it coincides, whether that's meaningful or not, coincides with something like a $5.5 million payday from the Department of Defense to the NFL. So I just, like, I don't know, just don't get it twisted when it comes to why we even have to endure
right.
the ritual in the first place. You just follow the money. It just reeks of money.
I think my final PSA is that this, I mean, it's not an incredibly groundbreaking take, but it's also not a tepid one. It's just that different people from different vantage points experience America in very, very different fashions. And for those who came from military families or served, the flag means something specific to them. And the national anthem might mean something specific and really, really profound to them. But also understand that it's an embodiment of America, and people live in very, very different Americas. And it's just Trump placating the ability to just say, hey, here is just a surge of players who don't care about our country and don't care about the flag because of their very, very silent, very, very protected under First Amendment rights protest. And I just wish that it didn't have to be militant. And it's hard to break that barrier. And hopefully, eventually, that happens. But I don't know if it's going to happen in this presidency.
Yeah. I think that is a good place to stop, unless anyone else has anything else they want to get off their chest.
No.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like eventually we could just go on all day. And there was actually some really interesting football, oddly enough.
Yeah.
So might as well talk about that.
Yeah, I will be curious to see how this continues to play out in the weeks to come for sure. All right, now turning to the game, because, yes, after all, there was a game. In fact, a really exciting game against the Bengals, maybe a little bit too exciting for some fans, needing to go to overtime to beat a team that a lot of people regarded as a bad team a few weeks into the season. So I heard from more than one person after the game that this was a quote-unquote bad win for the Packers. Alex, first, is there such a thing as a bad win? And if so, is that what this was against the Bengals?
I mean, yeah, I feel like... It's weird because I think that wins that fans believe and people who follow the team believe are bad wins, like this one, are like the same wins that coaches will like harp on about and be like, you know, that was a great win. Come from behind, facing adversity, adversity football, adversity, adversity. Like we responded. So I don't know. Like, I'm glad they won. And I think I texted, was it you I was texting this to after? Like, was I kind of mad that the Bengals offense, which hadn't scored a touchdown entering the game, was able to kind of go down the field at ease a few times and put it in the end zone twice in the first half? Yeah, like that was annoying. That was really discouraging. But to me, this Packers season, just knowing what we know about Atlanta and knowing what, like, the way Seattle's kind of been exposed, like, I think playoff seeding is so important. And I'm just going to, like, take the approach where the NFL is weird. Week to week, nothing's going to make sense. They could come out on Thursday night and lay an egg, or they could come out on Thursday night and hang 45 on the Bears, who have also been really good and given, you know, beat the Steelers and given the Falcons a great fight. But at the end of the day, like, what matters is, are they going to get a home playoff game? Can they get home field in the playoffs? Because ultimately, I think they're going to be there in the end, and I don't think they can beat a high-powered Falcons team if they have to play them on the road. So, like, I don't really care what it looks like. I just care who's healthy coming out and the fact that it's a win.
Yeah, I my working theory is that Aaron Rodgers only threw a pick six because he should have thrown a pick six against the Seahawks, and that's just the football gods. Like kind of like a Final Destination type thing. Like
they've got to get you.
Got to get one off the books. Yeah.
So, cheated death.
Yeah.
And now so, the ledger has been balanced.
Right, exactly. It was like, how weird is that? And it wasn't like what you would expect a pick six to be off a fluky tipped pass. It was.
He jumped the route.
Yeah, he just jumped the route. He just was a good defensive play, but also the type of avoidance that Aaron Rodgers usually exercises in that situation, or the type of wherewithal to understand that the cornerback could potentially jump that route. Regardless, though, I don't know if there. I think there is such a thing as a bad win, even though it's subjective. But I don't know if it was this one, because Packers are a notoriously slow starting team, and man, were they banged up. Like, the interior rush struggled because without Mike Daniels, they don't really have an interior rush. And I think that King, while he was really good against Julio Jones in week two, like, got beat up a little bit by another elite wide receiver. Like, what a tall task for that kid to have to endure week two to week three. You've got Julio Jones, and then you've got AJ Green. But all in all, Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers, and you put him on any team in the league and they're going to win 10 games. So it's, I don't know how good this team is right now, but it's like Alex said, it's going to be scratch and claw for a while. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah. I mean, 3 weeks in, it's so hard to tell. And certainly, and I've heard some people talking about this, recently, that, you know, post this new CBA, the teams just don't get enough time in the off season and in training camp to really install what they need to install and to coach up the players that they need to coach up, such that the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season, the first quarter of the season effectively, is just kind of like preseason part two, except the games count.
Yeah. And we get mad if Rodgers plays much in the preseason. And I feel like every preseason we talk about whether or not he should play. And I usually say that he shouldn't, because the risk of losing him to a preseason injury is just too great. But I mean, that's a real thing, right? I mean, I think it's safe to say there's rust to be shaken off, like, throughout the league. I mean, the NFL was basically just turned upside down last Sunday and nothing makes sense, right? I mean, every team you thought was good looked terrible. And the fact that you might have thought the Packers are good, and they still won while looking terrible, I'm totally cool with that.
So they got a win. Whether or not it was a bad win or a good win, a win is a bright spot. And for me, there were two other obvious bright spots coming out of this game, and that's Josh Jones on defense and Geronimo Allison on offense. So I want to talk about these bright spots. I want to start with GMO. Both McCarthy and Rodgers were asked about him in the postgame presser, and neither of them bit at the what did we learn about Allison lead-in to the question, which I thought was funny. They both basically said, look, he's a hell of a football player. We've known for a while, and now you know too. I heard Tom Silverstein say he's, quote, legitimate number three material this week on a podcast, and I think I heard Justice Mosqueda also say something similar this week. Alex, do you agree with Silverstein's assertion that Allison is that good, number three material, or maybe even number two?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think he's still a young player, right? I think he's really physically gifted, which we saw. And I know it was an easy play to make. It was a free play, and the catch was great. But, like, how great is that? Just like nonstop loop of him just making Pac-Man Jones just look silly, right? Sure. Just like snapping his ankles. Like, he's kind of a shifty guy that you don't have to, he's not necessarily a slot guy, which I like. Like, he can play on the boundary a lot, and he's got some pretty good size. So I think when he's healthy and when he's in the lineup and not suspended, which I know Rodgers in his post-game press conference kind of alluded to him giving him some crap for that, I think he's someone that's really important to have out there, particularly with the health situation with Randall Cobb and even Jordy Nelson going into that game. So, yeah, man, I mean, I think you have nothing but good things to say about him to this point.
I'm watching that throw again. I just pulled it up, and it's an amazing throw from Rodgers to put it right on the money. But Allison ran a heck of a route, and then his little, like you said, Alex, his little juke jive on Pac-Man Jones was pretty impressive, man. I think he's legit. And Rodgers even said in his post game that we've known it for a while, and I think he said on the first day of camp, whatever it was, 2 years ago now, he's like, how did this kid not get drafted? It doesn't make any sense. Like, he's just got such a raw natural ability to get off the line and just make athletic good football type plays. So I don't know if it's going to be in lieu of our injured receivers throughout the season, or if he actually finds himself into a wide receiver number three role. I think we're going to see a lot of him because he's good enough to, you know, to earn that type of playing time.
He's got to catch that one cross body throw from Rodgers, though.
Got to catch that
one. That was such a ridiculous throw.
That was a third down too, wasn't it?
I think it was. Yeah.
You got to catch that. But I love watching him run because he is not. You would never describe him as fast, but he's so smooth and slippery. Like, it's just hard. He's hard to keep track of. He just looks so fluid, and it's the kind of guy where, like, if you're covering him, like, you're not going to lose him with speed, but he's just so, like, he's just so smooth that he might get behind you and you have no idea how that happened.
Yeah, totally. And again, that's why I think that play was so cool. Like, there's a very limited amount of athletes who could run at their highest speed and change direction like that.
Yeah.
and he's one of them. He's definitely smooth is definitely a good way to put it.
All right, guys, what about Josh Jones? I feel like you really made a statement on Sunday. 12 tackles, 3 tackles for a loss, and 2 sacks. Both of those sacks came in the second half where the Bengals converted 0 third downs, if you do not include a pass interference flag on King. Alex, a few weeks ago, it seemed like it was Kevin King sort of stating his case to be an every snap player. And now I would argue that Josh Jones did just the same thing on Sunday. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely do. And I know, I just hope that they continue to find creative ways to use him, and that against teams that are not the Bengals, that are not with a new offensive coordinator, and are not, like, basically just, like, hamstrung offensively with a quarterback like Andy Dalton, that they'll be as aggressive. Because, he was really good. I mean, the first sack, where it was kind of like a convergence of him and Morgan Burnett, he kind of just came unblocked off the edge, right? But the second one, I think Tyler Croft was the tight end, backup tight end for the Bengals, whatever. But it was still like a legitimate pass rushing move. I hope that aggression stays and that they continue to basically just let him loose, because he needs to be playing at or behind the line of scrimmage. So, yeah, I mean, he was a huge bright spot. And also just one of those guys, like, they need a turnover creator. Like, they don't have, what do they have, one takeaway this year, right? Against Seattle, it was the strip sack on Russell Wilson, I believe, that got the Packers offense going.
Yeah, no interceptions.
No interceptions so far this year. Like, they need takeaways, and they need guys who play at, like, the speed Josh Jones does with, like, the violence that he does to create those. So, it was a great performance no matter what. It's definitely going to earn him a bigger role. I'm just still, like, and I feel like I'm a Debbie Downer, but taking, like, the whole, like, it was the Bengals approach. Let's see if they really cut him loose. And I think they will again on Thursday against the Bears, but, you know, I'm excited to see them, like, play the Lions and see how Josh Jones is utilized against a team with a more than competent quarterback who's also kind of elusive.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting once Kentrell Bryce is fully healthy, how they kind of divvy up playing time, or if they stick really, 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 really to that nitro package, because they played in that a lot on Sunday. And it looks like I'm looking at Tuesday participation, and Kendrell Bryce was full participation today. So, I'll be interested to see. But, man, for a guy who didn't play a single snap in week one and then played almost every snap in week two and week three, it's kind of crazy to think that he couldn't find the field right off the bat, because he made a pretty, pretty profound impact. And especially in the second half, like you said, Zach, he came up big when the Packers really needed him to. So I think of the two bright spots that you brought up, I'm more inclined to say him over Allison, because we've kind of seen Allison. We know a little bit about who he is. Josh Jones, was kind of a mystery coming into the season, and we've seen high round draft picks from the Packers look good and then fall off, a la our two cornerbacks who I thought were going to be the savior.
Yeah, as long as we have Aaron Rodgers on the team and I have to pick a bright spot other than him on offense or defense, I'm going to pick the one on defense because they need all the help they can get.
All
right, guys, let's shift our focus a bit and turn to this week's game against the Bears, which you alluded to, Alex. It's a short week for both teams, and I thought a good place to start as we look ahead is the offensive line, or lack thereof. Kyle Murphy goes to IR. Brian Bulaga goes down again. Even the long snapper Brett Goode is done for the year. Today, the team signed tackle Ulrich John off the Cardinals practice squad.
Have we really confirmed it's not John Ulrich, though?
No. Confirmation pending.
Is Ulrich John, but that man's name is backwards. Yeah. Man. Like, what's that about?
His name is
in
a bad
way. Can't trust that guy.
His name is in a bad way. The line is in a bad way. I posted on Twitter a poll earlier today asking, who is the most likely to start on the Packers offensive line this week? Me, you, or half an onion in a bag? Happy to report that half an onion in a bag is clearly the favorite to start. Alex, when the Packers square off against the Bears, how often will Rodgers be running for his life, and why is the answer the entire game?
I mean, the answer. It's just not healthy, man. It sucks. Like, it turns out that having some really good tackles be out and having their backups go to injured reserve is a bad scenario.
Yeah, not good.
Like, there is a – I saw Zach Cruz, tweet about it. It is possible that guys named Pankey and McCray are going to be starting at tackle for the Packers. I just love that this – I mean, I don't love that Brett Goode obviously got hurt. But, in Madden, if you just kind of the way you construct your roster, if you just want to have a bunch of fun skill guys and you don't have that many offensive linemen, because who signs offensive linemen in Madden? The one fake offensive lineman you have is your long snapper, and even he's hurt. So yep. even at a 58 overall in Madden, you can't even throw him in now because he's also down. Dude.
I've made this reference before, but it's when you're eight season into your Madden franchise and half the players are made up names.
Yeah, yep. That's exactly what it's like.
Well, you know what their new long snapper's name is? Tabor Pepper.
Put it on the board, man. That's a great one.
That's a good name, too.
Tabor Pepper, who was running a cash register last week.
Well, so that's amazing. The offensive line leads me to the Bears defense, and I want to get some listener questions in here. We're running short on time. I want to start with Matub. Matub writes in and asks if the Packers should be worried about this Bears defense, and we were just discussing the offensive line. I mean, the Bears defense, they're ranked 31st in DVOA against number one wide receivers, but when you look at their schedule, that's against Julio Jones, Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, and all three of those guys got theirs. Run defense is a different story. They're ranked 4th in DVOA against the run. Does this Bears defense scare you? Does it scare you more than the Packers offensive line? What's the deal?
I'm not as scared of the Bears defense. Like you said, I'm more scared of what the Packers offensive line is going to be able to do, but they played the Legion of Boom in week one, and I don't care what you say about Seattle. I still think that offense is in pretty rough shape, but I think the defense is still a pretty intimidating defense, and the Bears, albeit probably a stronger defense than what they experienced against the Bengals. I think that I like their chances, and shaking off the rust and Rodgers getting into week four, and hopefully Jordy at full capacity, hopefully Randall Cobb at least almost full capacity. I think they'll be okay against that secondary. The offensive line might be a different story, but I mean, hopefully he can just breathe and stay alive for long enough to get his little slant routes and get 12 men on the field and capitalize on some free plays.
A little peek behind the curtain. Alex is back, had to drop off there for a second, but Nick stepping up pinch hitting in a big spot. Nick Bornheimer taking the mantle. Alex, welcome back just in time to do a little rapid-fire listener questions at the APC pod. On Twitter is where you find us, and again, all of our online nonsense. So we tweet out before every episode, try to get some questions, and had quite a few responses today, so we'll try to get to as many as we can. Seth on Twitter asks, is Blake Martinez the middle linebacker we've needed since Nick Barnett left? Maybe a bit of hyperbole there, but Martinez did play well. What do you guys think, Alex?
Yeah, no, he had a really good game. He was right behind Josh Jones, I believe, like 11 tackles. He was in the backfield a little bit. The guy that they've needed since Nick Barnett, probably not. Like, I think the closest thing they've had to a true playmaking linebacker, I guess in that post-Nick Barnett era, is Desmond Bishop.
And yep, took the name right out of my mouth.
Like, how fun was he, man? And they were still so right about his health. Like, he just, I feel like I never saw him again or even, like, heard his name after they let him go. I don't see Blake Martinez as that kind of player. But, I mean, maybe Josh Jones is the greatest linebacker as positions continue to blend into each other. Maybe he's the post-Nick Barnett guy that we're looking for. I don't see Blake as, like, a truly explosive player, though there were some good things on Sunday.
Yeah, and played well. I'm not sold on him yet. I don't think he's quite explosive enough. But who knows? Maybe he can fill a role, and that's really all we need at the linebacking core right now.
There were some times last year, too, that I feel like I've got a couple different group texts. One, Nick, you and I are in. I feel like we just ripped Blake Martinez because the few times I actually got to, just with scheduling and everything, like sit down and watch, you know, rewatch games and like all 22, Jake Ryan was so much quicker to him, like, quicker than him to the hole and to the ball. And there were so many times where, like, as a linebacker, like, you're basically reading a key and you needed to shoot the gap, and he would be late or hesitant or indecisive, and teams, like, in the running game, they make you pay. And I haven't done that this year. You know, he could have made a second year leap, but just based off of last season, I don't project him to be like a truly explosive player. I'm not ruling it out, but I feel like Jake Ryan is probably closer to that than Blake Martinez is, despite their games on Sunday.
I would agree with that. I think that Jake Ryan, his injury has kind of been low key, like hurting the Packers quite a bit, especially in run defense. Next question up is from Price. Will there be an impact because of the long snapper change? And I want to answer this one really quickly, and then I'll throw it to you, Alex, because we had talked on the program a number of weeks ago. I believe, was it family night or somewhere in the preseason where...
Family night,
where the special teams unit really, really struggled, snapper, holder, all that stuff. It was a mess, and I was the only one willing to go out on a limb and say, this matters. This is important, and they need to make a change. And they did. They brought in Brett Goode and haven't had any problems since. And now they don't have him anymore again. So I'll throw it to you, Alex. Will this, somewhere down the line, make an impact?
I mean, yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we finally got a little taste of Tony Romo, and they were as they were lining up for the game-winning field goal Sunday in overtime, he was talking about how, like, everyone talks about, oh, Mason Crosby, like, the nerves. Like, the long snapper's got to be really nervous. And when it's a guy who's been doing it forever, that's great. When it's a brand new guy, that's a whole other story. I just feel like at some point, hopefully it's in an insignificant moment, you know, there's bound to be some growing pains. But assuming there's at least one field goal attempt or one extra point on Thursday night, it'll be the first time this snapper, holder, kicker combination has ever worked together, other than, you know, in like a live rep scenario, other than I assume practice this week, although even those reps were shortened because it was a short week.
Yeah, I think we're gonna see a hiccup, maybe not this week, maybe we'll get by unscathed, but I think Zach, to your point, we're gonna see a hiccup, and whether it results in a missed kick or just something that makes that it's going to be noticeable that it's a little bit out of sync, because man, you develop a relationship when you have that same fluidity spanning a number of years or even a season when you work together throughout training camp. And it's hard just to get on the same page with people that need to work in conjunction so much to get that end result.
and make it, you know, kind of as flawless as possible. So I think, I think we're going to see a little hiccup.
And really quickly too, like, it's easy to minimize just a long snapper's job on field goals. But, you know, I think that they talked about it after family night, like, the reason there were some struggles is because you do it so much that the ball is caught by Vogel a certain way based on how many rotations it makes from the snapper. So
that's how, if you're long snapper,
right? Like, that's how exact this stuff is in order to get the hold down, have the laces in the exact, you know, direction and angle and everything that you want for Mason Crosby to easily just be able to, even something on an extra point that looks automatic to us, like to the eye, it's that exact. So, like, expecting a guy to come in on a short week and just nail that right off the bat, I think is a little, it's almost unfair.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. One more question. There were a lot of questions. We're not going to get to them all. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions at the APC pod on Twitter. It's a hodgepodge show and we got to let these guys go. So one more question. Mateus writes in, and Nick, you alluded to this earlier, but Alex, I'll start with you. Is the Nitro defense being used too much? What are your thoughts?
I mean, we talked about this last week with Justice, right? Justice Mosqueda, who joined us. Like, the Packers are still in spots playing the Nitro defense near the goal line in short yardage situations. It's not ideal. I think it's less ideal now because Mike Daniels is hurt. Maybe you can get away with it when you have a guy who has become almost like an automatic win at the line of scrimmage. You know, it's interesting. I think they are playing it too much, but I also can't argue against it given the lack of depth on the defensive line, which is something I keep talking about, and it's like literally just like a matter of bodies now. And it's something that we could, I'm not hoping for this, but at the end of the year be talking about, because you know, last time I checked, that Atlanta team is really good at running the ball too, and if their season comes to an end because they can't stop the run, people are going to be pissed that they didn't address the interior defensive line much at all, save for like undrafted free agent signings, cutting LaTroy Guyon, and things of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's being played out of necessity right now, and it shouldn't be their base package, and it almost seems like it is. So Josh Jones has stepped up in a major way, but I think it can't be it's not an evergreen type of defensive package. You need to get that interior line bolstered up a little bit more. So right now, Alex, like you said, I don't really think they've got a better option. So we just got to hope that guys get healthy.
All right. That'll do it. We'll hit the polka there at that point. Thank you to Alex Patakis for phoning in from work. Thank you to Nick Bornheimer for phoning in from home, pitching, pinch hitting there, stepping up to the plate in a big spot. Really quickly, an update to the APC Pick'em League. Mateus, yes, that Mateus from the listener question segment, is in the lead. Has shout out to the lead from the very first week and has never let it go. In first place, APC contributor Mike Veith in second place. Lewis, listener Lewis, I think he's located in the UK, actually. Correct me if I'm wrong later on that, Lewis, is in third place. Evan Tex Western, the man who pays the bills, keeps the lights on, our fearless leader, in fourth place. Dan is in fifth place. The list goes on and on. Victor from Brazil in seventh. My brother Chris is in eighth. Alex Patakis, you are representing the pod in 10th. And I shot up all the way to 18th place. Ben Foldy's in 20th. Wow. Riveting stuff, you guys. Any last words before we hit the road?
I just want to say I appreciate both of you, and I enjoy being able to talk about issues as serious as we did today with some like-minded people that aren't going to just spew hate everywhere. So,
and burn a Rain HQ jersey in a trash can. Yeah.
And also, I look forward to not reading the comment section on this post.
I think that'll do her. We should pick a winner for the Bears game. What do you guys think? I'm going to take the Packers. Alex, what about you?
If we're just going straight up, I'm taking the Packers as well. I haven't done enough homework to be able to tell you what the spread is at this moment, although I'm betting Nick did.
Actually, believe it or not, I have not. I'm trying to stay away from it because I'm just going to get annihilated like I did last week, but I think it'll be Packers in a close one.
I like it. All right, thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Alex and Nick, again. So for Alex and Nick and also Ben Foley out in Flatbush, I am Zach Rapport holding it down in Queens, New York. Let's go out there on Thursday and get a win, Packers. We'll talk to you guys next week.